When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
That's right, Bear Down Bears fans. It's time for another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast, Bears Banter, powered by Second City Gridiron. Bill Zimmerman with you, and we are coming at you on a victory week. That's right, the Chicago Bears defeated the Tennessee Titans 24-17 in what was exactly the way everybody expected this game to play out. We've got plenty to talk about, and we've got plenty to talk about with Adam Amin. That's right, the Chicago Bulls broadcaster, but also NFL broadcaster. You know him from Chicago Bears preseason. And of course, he was on the call with Mark Sanchez on Sunday, the Caleb Williams debut game. Adam is going to be by here in just a little bit to talk about what the preseason was like and what week one and his observations as we move forward here to week two and the Houston Texans. So let's dive into this game and let's not bury the lead here. Let's start with Caleb Williams, where obviously that was a disappointing debut for Caleb Williams on multiple levels. Obviously, not even having 100 passing yards was well short of what anyone expected. Now, I did not expect Caleb Williams to have a huge game here in week one. I believe I had him at 190 yards passing, and I thought people were going to have a panic attack at 190 yards. So certainly 95 yards is going to have some people shaking in their boots that the Bears have another quarterback problem. But I certainly don't see it that way. Because, you know, when you look at the body of the work of Caleb Williams, and the one thing that I am going to do moving forward here is Bears content creators, Bears media, and Bears fans, we're big fans of making excuses for the quarterback, right? That happens all the time, right? We get to Mitch Trubisky, and it's, well, he needs a better O-line. Matt Nagy needs to do better in the red zone. He needs receiver. Like, we heard all the excuses. If Mitch had A, B, and C, then he would be awesome. Well, he would also be on the best team in the NFL and would just have to be a game manager. So that's not exactly what you were looking for. Then with Justin Fields, and I think it was deserved, the criticism that the Chicago Bears had for what they did with Justin Fields his first 2 years in the league. So there were plenty of excuses there, but I thought the excuses kind of dried out in year three when there was certainly enough to get a good evaluation on Justin Fields, and that evaluation was that he wasn't going to be good enough, and that's not what Ryan Poles was looking for, and he decided to move on. So when we get to Caleb Williams, with the team that is around him, which is certainly better than the 2017 Bears for Mitch Trubisky, and certainly better than the 2021 Bears for Justin Fields and the 2022 Bears for that matter, because the 2024 Bears are a solid football team, which they proved, and we're going to get into the other aspects of this roster and how it performed on Sunday, I'm not going to make excuses for Caleb Williams. I have seen a lot of, well, if Keenan Allen made this catch, and yes, that was absolutely, Keenan Allen should have had that ball in the end zone. But I'm not going to play the, well, if Keenan Allen had this catch, if this pass wasn't batted, if this happened, if that happened, Caleb Williams would have had a much better day. Because, like, we can look at, you know, it wasn't his first start, but I still remember that Bengals game with Justin Fields, his first, where Andy Dalton got hurt and Fields played like three quarters. I remember Allen Robinson dropping a nice deep ball that would have been like a 40-yard touchdown pass. He dropped it at like the two-yard line, would have just rolled right into the end zone. And I remember, I calculate, well, if Allen Robinson caught that, then this would have been Fields' statistics. This would have been his passer rating. We're not going to do that because the reality of the situation is that other players will make mistakes. But when you have Keenan Allen, Rome Odunze, we'll talk about the injury in a second, DJ Moore, and all the other guys around Caleb Williams, certainly the offensive line could have been better at times, but that's enough to make a clean evaluation of Caleb Williams. So yes, did Keenan Allen drop that ball? Yes. Did a couple other things happen that were unfortunate breaks for Caleb Williams? Sure. But that's how an NFL Sunday goes. They go like that every Sunday. So I'm not going to play the what-if game with Caleb Williams. I am a believer in Caleb Williams. I think he's going to be the Bears quarterback for 10, 15, 20 years here moving forward. I still believe that after 1 week. So I'm certainly not going to sit there and be like, well, and play the excuse game and why Caleb Williams is going to get better. Do I think Caleb Williams is going to get better? Yes. And here's why. And it's not because of excuses I can make that, well, Keenan Allen won't do that again. And this will get better and that'll get better. No, I'm evaluating on what I saw from Caleb Williams on Sunday. And what I saw is a rookie quarterback. I saw a rookie quarterback who was probably had some nerves. And I know Caleb Williams, you got to be careful sometimes about what you say. And Caleb's going to learn this over time. Like Justin Fields, after week one, his first preseason game of his rookie year. And Justin Fields, what'd you think of it? Oh, it wasn't as fast as I thought the NFL was going to be. And then Justin Fields literally spent the next 3 years of his life struggling to catch up to the speed of the NFL in which he had to process defenses, make decisions, and throw the football. Be careful about what you say, Caleb Williams, when you tell other people you never get nervous before a football game. Because what I saw was nerves from Caleb Williams. That was an NFL debut. He probably wanted to make a big splash. He certainly didn't want to be the reason the Bears lost. And I think after a couple early misses, he started to press a little. And the nerves probably got the best of him. I don't think he's going to be a nervous quarterback. I actually think in the second half, and specifically the fourth quarter, when you needed Caleb Williams to be at his best, and was he? No, he still was not, but he was not nervous. He was settled. The moment was not too big for him. And because of all those things, we saw Caleb Williams not make crippling mistakes in the second half. He had that one really bad sack in the first half where he broke one tackle, decided to scramble back so he could buy himself some more time and go big play hunting, but he couldn't buy himself more time. All he did was lose more yards. And that's a growing experience for Caleb Williams, because you know what you noticed? He didn't do that again. Growing already in one game. So he did make that terrible mistake that did cost the Bears in the first half, but he did not turn the football over and he did not make terrible crippling sacks, anything like that in the fourth quarter. So he let the rest of the team do what it was doing and he stayed out of the way. And he made a couple plays, converted a couple first downs, stayed in bounds on the scramble, did some smart things with the football. And that's what you like to see out of a rookie. You just want to see that the rookie makes a couple plays and just feels right in the game. And I thought Caleb Williams did. I don't look at that performance and go, oh boy. Like you look at some like Bo Nix. I look at Bo Nix's performance and go, oh boy. Like that doesn't look good, because he had like two interceptions, could have had like six. He was awful, absolutely awful. And that's where you have concerns with rookie quarterbacks, where you sit there and go, can they even, how much can they improve from where this bar is? With Caleb Williams, the accuracy needs to improve. And we know he's an accurate quarterback. We know that. And I know Bill Belichick and his way, he was 10 for 20 in the preseason. He's not accurate. Well, congratulations, Bill Belichick. I didn't know you scouted box scores. But as we know, Caleb Williams' accuracy was, if you watched where the ball placement was, it was good in the preseason, and it was not good in week one. It was dreadful in week one. Caleb Williams' accuracy was dreadful, and that needs to improve. And I believe it will improve, because there's nothing on tape in college or pro that tells us that his accuracy is reflective of who Caleb Williams is as a quarterback. It's not. So I expect that accuracy to get better. And when that accuracy gets better, because of everything else he looked comfortable doing within the Bears offense, I think everything's going to come together better. So let's expand out of Caleb here. Let's talk a little bit more about the offense as a group. Tough to evaluate wide receivers and tight ends because there just wasn't enough of a passing game due to Caleb Williams. So not going to sit here. Yes, we can talk about Keenan Allen needs to make better catches. You know, he needs to actually hold on to the football and not fine. I expect Keenan Allen to do that. And if Keenan Allen doesn't do that, he's not going to get an extension. He's going to be wide receiver three here in a few weeks. And then he's not going to come back because he's washed. I don't think Keenan Allen is washed. If you watch the way he moved, the way he still cuts, the way he's able to create space in that game, it just, for whatever reason, a couple lacks of concentration and Keenan had a couple issues there. So I'm not too worried about it. DJ Moore still looked. You got to like a couple of the moves DJ had. And Rome Odunze, looks like that injury is not that big of a deal. And while we're talking about Rome Odunze, let's talk about Velus Jones. I do not think Velus Jones is to blame for Rome Odunze's injury. And I know I put out, I'm confident that's where Rome got hurt. I know the Bears haven't specifically said it. I know Kevin Fishbane showed the next play, which is where Rome was limping. But if you notice, Rome didn't have any sort of contact or anything like that and then came out of the game. I'm going to say that Rome got hurt on the play that I tweeted out at Bill T. Zimmerman. If you haven't seen it, go check out my Twitter feed. You'll see it right there. Velus Jones kind of, he comes around the corner on the swing pass, flies into the back of Rome Odunze's knee. Odunze goes down. But again, he was pushed into Odunze. It was a football play. It was not Velus Jones' fault. But I do get the fans that were like, of course it was Velus that ran into Odunze, because there is something going on there with Velus. And Ryan Poles and it, he's alive, that he had in Hard Knocks, just shows that he is a Velus Jones stan. He will continue to stand for that man. And look, I get the speed and the explosiveness and the things that Velus brings to the table. But if he can't play football at a basic level, then he can't be on this roster. Like, I look at the offensive, you know, the inactives, and I would have wanted to see Roschon Johnson active, but you've got to activate Roschon and replace him, either replace Velus Jones or Travis Homer. Travis Homer clearly showed why he made this roster. He is a core special teams player. I would have not had Velus active, and I would have had Roschon Johnson active. You know, Tyler Scott was a surprise inactive for a lot of people. But when you look at the offense, it's really hard to find a spot for Tyler Scott to play right now in terms of who can be active if everyone is healthy. Now, Rome Odunze, if Rome Odunze misses the Texans game, expect Tyler Scott to be active. I think that's what Tyler Scott is going to be this year, is because he does not play special teams. And you have to keep in mind how important it is for the bottom of the roster players on offense and defense to be core special teams players. And if they're not, they're going to have a hard time finding snaps on the football field. Tyler Scott does not play special teams. When they have tried him on special teams, he has struggled. So Tyler Scott is going to be inactive unless he has a more pivotal role in the offense, which if Odunze's out, if Keenan Allen gets hurt, any of these things happen, and they miss a couple games. Even if, say, Gerald Everett gets hurt and they're not going to do as many two tight end sets and they want more flexibility with, like, their wide receivers, there's ways that Tyler Scott can find his way to the active roster. But I don't think it's going to be when the Bears are at full strength with their weapons. So when I look at the receivers here, again, there's not too much to really dissect. When you look at the running game, and the running game, that's where we're going to start talking about this offensive line. This offensive line, I was pleased with what I saw out of both tackles. I thought both tackles played well. Nate Davis had a couple bad plays, but actually, when I went back and watched, I just assumed when Nate Davis got benched, it was because how awful he was. He made a couple really bad plays, but I think Nate Davis not playing as much was more kind of about how much Nate Davis is in the doghouse from everything that happened in training camp and preseason and not playing, and just the lack of availability he's constantly had with Eberflus and Poles calling him out. Poles likes Ryan Bates, and I think Ryan Bates being healthy is going to be a very different idea here. Now, they're going to try Ryan Bates at center. They're going to bail on Coleman Shelton after just 1 week, or can you help Coleman Shelton? Coleman Shelton's a good run blocker. Coleman Shelton is a bad pass blocker. So if you can get Coleman Shelton a little more support in pass blocking, I'm looking at you, Tevin Jenkins, then maybe the entire interior offensive line can look better. But when Tevin Jenkins and Coleman Shelton both struggle as much as they did for the entirety of that game, you're just going to have problems. And Tavondre Sweat, who is a big mountain of a man, he had a hell of a debut there, given Jenkins and Shelton fits. And Tevin Jenkins, and he had some good run blocks again. He annihilated some linebackers at the second level. He did his thing in the running game, but his pass blocking was bad. And it needs to improve greatly. It needs to be better than what it was last year. And last year, he was showing improvement in the pass game and pass blocking where it looked better. But true pass sets, his PFF grade was like 10. Like, it was non-existent. I'm not exaggerating. It was that bad. So Tevin Jenkins must play better. And if Tevin Jenkins wants to be extended and stay a Chicago Bear, it's great that he's a mauler in the run game, but he has to be a reliable pass blocker. And that just does not mean when he's going up against mediocre D tackles, he holds them at bay. That should be expected. You got muscle, Tevin. You can't get out muscled by Tavondre Sweat. That is bulk on bulk. You need to handle that better. So Tevin Jenkins absolutely needs to play better. I think he will. I think that was isolated. But we know, again, Tev did not play well against the Packers in Week 18. So if you're stacking regular season games, now he's played poorly two games in a row. We have to see Tevin Jenkins play better. We have to see Coleman Shelton play better. And we have to see what's shaking out here at right guard. Because Nate Davis, again, there are certain things he does well, but again, how reliable is he? How available is he? And how much is he in this doghouse right now? We're going to have to see all that on the offensive line. But the offensive line has to be better. It has to be better blocking for both the running backs and for Caleb Williams. I think Caleb Williams had some pressure, was able to evade some of it, made good decisions for the most part under pressure. Although when you look at the statistics, when you look at his passing statistics under pressure, they are really bad when PFF split up when he was under pressure, about the worst in the league. So obviously Caleb needs to be better throwing the football, but again, made good decisions, did not turn the football over. So we've got to see more from the offensive line. And I think if we do, I think everything's going to come up a notch. Obviously, Caleb Williams needs to improve that accuracy as well. Now, switching over to special teams. I do not want to go to the defense just yet. I want to go to special teams because I was thrilled with Richard Hightower's unit's performance. Holy cow, was that a great... Now, again, I know Velus turned the ball over. And we talked about Velus. I don't think Velus should be active this Sunday. I think they should go with Carter and Khalil Herbert as their kick returners. I have asked for Khalil Herbert to be a kick returner for I don't know how long. Can we please put him out there? This is literally his skill set. Literally what Khalil Herbert does is these dynamic kick returns. Put him out there, give him a chance with the football and see what he can do. Now, put Carter out there. Carter can show that he's still a capable returner. Let Velus be inactive for a while. Let Roschon Johnson play. Roschon Johnson can contribute positively to a game. He can play special teams effectively, pass block, catch balls. There are things he can do. So get Roschon Johnson out there and get Velus Jones out of there. But special teams wise, Torrey Taylor, you had to like what you'd seen. You'd like to have seen a couple of those pins inside the five. Didn't happen. That's okay. Only the first game for Torrey Taylor. I thought long snapping was not an issue. You had to be a little concerned without Patrick Scales. I think that went as well as could be expected. I thought their punt and kick coverage was strong overall as a unit. I thought, you know, they did not allow the Titans to get any big breaks on special teams. Cairo Santos played well. I mean, this unit, and of course, the blocked punt between Daniel Hardy and Jonathan Owens with the scoop and score, that was a phenomenal performance by special teams. If Velus Jones did not fumble and punt the ball back to the other. Unbelievable. He doesn't just muff it and then pick it up and run 6 yards and get tackled at the nine. No, it has to go off his foot in typical Velus fashion and bounce forward 20 yards. How that's even possible, I don't know. But of course, Velus Jones makes the impossible possible. So other than that Velus Jones fumble, and yeah, giving up 3 points like that, that's crippling. That's terrible. But the special teams unit as a whole, other than Velus, outstanding. Richard Hightower had that team ready to play. And the defense, you have to be happy overall with what the defense did. And the defense does get credit for Will Levis struggling. But I am not a believer in Will Levis. I do not think Will Levis is a good quarterback. I think Will Levis showed. Like the pick six, Tyreek Stevenson, well done. Great job, Tyreek. Great, you know, great awareness, getting that ball and getting to the end zone. I mean, that play alone shows you that Will Levis is not an NFL quarterback. Like that's just an idiotic decision that like a high school quarterback makes when he's panicked. A bad high school quarterback makes when he's panicked. That's not the type of thing that an NFL quarterback should even consider doing. But Will Levis did it. And Will Levis made some other bad decisions. Will Levis had some bad accuracy issues. You know, he underthrew a couple balls that could have resulted in points. I thought Will Levis was terrible. Absolutely terrible. And I think the Bears need to tip their cap to him. Because I truly believe, if Mason Rudolph played 60 minutes of football for the Titans, the Bears don't win that game. Will Levis was a big contributor to that, and I don't think that that is some sort of overstatement. I think Will Levis is that bad, and I think he helped make the defense that much better. Now, that being said, you play your opponent in front of you. The linebackers, overall, pretty good. A couple of missed tackles, and as much as I criticize Tremaine Edmonds, that tackle he made on third down against Spears, outstanding tackle. Tremaine Edmonds gets a tip of the cap for that. TJ Edwards played great again. Everyone in the secondary played well. I don't think there's one person in the secondary that you can point to and say, that guy did not play well. The secondary was great. And when you look up front, DeMarcus Walker, arguably his best game as a Bear. He was fantastic. Darrell Taylor showed that that is going to be a very good acquisition for them. So when you look overall at the defensive line, Jervon Dexter, I didn't think Dexter played as well as many. Now, he made a couple splash plays that got his name called in the game, but down to down, I don't think Dexter was there. I think what Dexter showed again, and I still hope he develops and proves me wrong this year, that he is your good, strong, rotational defensive tackle. Billings is your one tech. You don't have a starting three tech that you need. And if Dexter was rotating as your main defensive tackle sub behind those two guys, you'd love what Dexter brings to the table. I have concerns still with him as a starting three tech and really being the type of disruptor the Bears need at that three tech position. So we'll see where Dexter goes from here. Hopefully a couple of those plays builds his confidence, gives him something to build on. But again, I don't think Dexter's game was more splash plays than it was solid consistency. I thought Andrew Billings played outstanding for pretty much the entire football game. Sweat wasn't second half Bears last year, Montez Sweat, but certainly was an impactful player. And, you know, Austin Booker didn't do much in limited opportunities, but Austin Booker also, if you watch the tape, when he was in the game, they targeted him and ran the football at him effectively. So that's where Austin Booker really only needs to be playing on third and longs right now. So overall, defensive line played better than I expected. They did have a stretch there where they let Tony Pollard gain way too many yards on the ground, but they did start bottling him up again when it mattered. So again, overall, and this is kind of my last point here before we get to Adam Amin, and this was the point I was trying to make on Twitter. Everyone kept putting out that statistic, the 0-12-1, whatever it is, number one overall quarterbacks since 2002, whatever it is. I don't have the exact stat because, you know, people are sharing the stat with me. They're sharing different numbers. Some of the graphics were inaccurate. It doesn't matter because all I was saying all along is how irrelevant that point is. That number does not matter because literally the number one quarterback number one overall quarterback that is drafted and goes to the team with the worst record of the previous season, you are literally on the worst team in the NFL the next season. Like, that's it. Simple. You go 3-14, you get the number one pick, you draft a quarterback, you're still considered the worst team in the league the next year. It's not like they take this number one quarterback and then spend $80 million in free agency. Teams don't do that. They're building. They're building. So when the Chicago Bears have the number one pick thanks to a trade, and that was the point, that graphic becomes irrelevant. That statistic becomes irrelevant because the Bears team is significantly better than what those other teams were. And therefore, Caleb Williams can struggle like he did, and the Chicago Bears can still win the football game. So that was irrelevant, had been totally irrelevant, was not even worth discussing. But here we are. The Chicago Bears are 1-0 and facing a huge game this week. Houston Texans, Sunday Night Football. Hopefully, we're going to see a better version of Caleb Williams as he goes toe-to-toe with C.J. Stroud. And, of course, this is the matchup of the quarterback the Bears did pick versus the quarterback the Bears could have picked. So we're going to get to Adam Amin. Again, he was on the call for Bears Titans. We will talk to him next. This is Bill Zimmerman, Bears Banter. We'll be right back.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
All right, welcome back into the podcast. Excited for this guest. This is a first-time guest on the podcast. We always love our first-timers. You know him more from the Chicago Bulls, where he does play-by-play, but of course, NFL on Fox, MLB on Fox, Bears preseason, and most importantly, he was with Mark Sanchez in the booth week one for Caleb Williams' debut and the Chicago Bears' 24-17 victory over the Titans. He is Adam Amin, and he joins me now. Adam, Bill Zimmerman, how are you?
Great to be with you, buddy. I really appreciate the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you jumping on. And let's dive into this. Let's start with the preseason here, because I think a lot of Bears fans were really pumped. And I get it. It's preseason games.
Sure. But
the Bears weren't just winning games. They were throttling everybody they played. They looked really sharp. And then the defense looked good early, but just a really flat first half. And I think a lot of Bears fans were panicking before halftime was even reached. So what was kind of the vibe that you got from the team in August versus kind of how they looked early on in that week one game?
Highly confident. So naturally, when you hear the confidence and you hear, you know, that they have high expectations coming out of the gate, and you see a little bit of a sluggish start, and not just for a half, but for pretty much a full game. Yeah, it's a little jarring. I can understand why fans would be, either A, obviously upset, and B, concerned. But I don't think one game is a reflection on anything, as I'm sure most people would tell you. And one of the themes in the preseason that we discussed, Jim Miller and I talked about it, and Kevin Byard said as much when I asked him about it on Friday, being kind of a newer addition, but a veteran guy who's seen a lot of things, right. I kind of gauged his answer too. The theme that we had kind of developed was the first half of the year, the defense is going to have to do a really good job kind of carrying the offense, because the offense is going to have a young quarterback who's never taken an NFL snap. They're going to have a lot of new pieces, wide receiver included, new running back, new offensive linemen in key spots, in really one key spot at center, and the addition of Ryan Bates as a swing guy. There was going to be, I think, a portion of time that was going to be, growing pain time. Like, there were going to be some certain problems. I'm not shocked by any means that that's how the game went or that's how the offense looked. I was a little surprised at where the defense was to start the game. But the other point that I had made when I talked about the matchup in week one was I think Tennessee is really good in their starting lineup on both sides of the ball. I think their ones are great, like really, really, really good. Their twos and threes are not as good. So when you get into the later stages of a game and your twos and threes, I'm not saying they're coming in the fourth quarter, but they're the ones who have spelled the ones for a drive, a couple of, you know, maybe on a 10-play drive for four plays on a drive. There's a lot more rotation if you feel comfortable with your twos and threes. The Titans don't. The Bears do. That's why we saw a bunch of other guys kind of rotate in on the defensive line. While we saw guys rotate in on offense, they could run a bunch of different sets. So I think the depth is better for the Bears. So all of those things being considered, it's not a shock that that's how the game went. The defense got a little bit better as the game went on because that's what deeper teams are able to do. They're a little bit fresher late in the game. The defense had high expectations. Kevin Byard said, we want to dominate. They certainly did for two quarters, I would say. And I think when you go back and look at the preseason, that's what you're trying to build is depth. When you say they're throttling teams, again, a lot of that is the twos and the threes. So if your twos and threes are playing really, really well, which I think the Bears, you know, second and third unit guys were really solid in the preseason, especially when you compare them to other teams, certainly the teams that they were playing, that does give you a little bit of hope for depth. So all of the things that we did talk about early and saw in preseason kind of came to fruition in at least for one game. I do think we're going to see more games like that. And I said, I think the defense will continue to have to carry the offense. And if Caleb Williams adjusts quickly, then you'll see the offense get better sooner rather than it take them 2 months to get to that point. The luxury that the Bears have is that after 2 months is when you start to see the tougher games, the divisional games, you know, San Francisco and Seattle, et cetera. Those are all the back end of the schedule. So all of this, and I may have answered one or two more of your questions there, Bill, but I say all that to say, don't panic. There's a lot of optimism for a reason. And I still think the elements of a strong foundation for an organization are all there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to get into some more of the on the field stuff with you. But before I do that, I want to ask you a little off the field with Caleb Williams because of the fact that you did preseason and all. So when did you get, before I ask you about that, where did you get your assignment for week one? When did you know you were doing the Caleb Williams debut?
Mid-July is when we found out. So we get like little chunks of our schedule, you know, two, three, sometimes four games at a time. So we got the assignment about 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago.
Okay. So I just want to ask you from a broadcasting perspective, as someone who's from Chicago, Addison Trail, who I went to Barrington, by the way, I'm a
Yeah.
little older than you. So I always used to play week one. Addison Trail and
sure.
But I don't know when that stopped. That stopped a long time ago.
Yeah, I was a volleyball player, so every spring Barrington always hosted a big tournament, so we would always be out there. It was always a trip, a yearly trip.
So there you go. But but keeping your objectivity when you're a Chicago person, obviously you're doing the Bulls, you're around Chicago media, and you're sitting there going, there's got to be a level of excitement for you at a professional level. And obviously yeah. You didn't get 350 yards and three touchdowns, but it's Caleb Williams' first regular season game. So kind of what's the mentality getting ready for a game like that, knowing you got to keep your objectivity? You know, Mark Sanchez got to keep his objectivity too as a USC guy. What's it like going into that game and knowing you kind of feel like you want to have a rooting interest?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I do the games more, I do more Bears games on national TV, and I get more people connecting with me, like friends of mine, like I'm a regional broadcaster for Fox, right? Essentially, like I rarely do like the number one or number two game. I'll jump on the number two crew for about a month once, so we get into baseball playoffs and things like that. But for the most part, I'm doing a game that goes to, you know, 15% of the country, sometimes 35% of the country, sometimes 50% of the country, whatever it may be. Sometimes you run into a bigger one. Those are rare. Usually these games are going to like a fifth of the country, quarter of the country. And for me to get a Bears game, I get a lot of like friends. My family gets a lot, you know, really excited because they're guaranteed to be able to watch me on TV. You know, friends of mine, obviously growing up here, are all Bears fans. So when they play well, I'm getting texts from them. When they see us come on the air, I'm getting a text or a photo or whatever it may be. So like just those little kind of almost silly things make me feel more and more connected to the city. And then the more I do the Bulls, the longer I do the Bulls, and you know, I hope I get to do that for a long time. I feel more and more connected to this place. And again, I'm from here. This was already kind of built in, but I have a home here now. Like I feel roots here more than maybe I ever have in my life. So the fight is not a hard thing to like remember that I'm being objective, but there are little ticks, you know, like I will, during the preseason, I will say Bears more than I'll say Chicago. You will probably hear me say Chicago more often during a Bears broadcast on Fox, just because I'm consciously trying to make sure, like, no fan of the Titans who knows me or knows my background is going to go, oh no, you know, like the broadcasters who know me know I'm an objective guy. They know I know how to do my job, and they know that if whatever team does stuff well, I'm going to get excited for it. I thought I was very excited for the Titans in the first half yesterday because they made great plays. The Pollard run was great. The Chig Okonkwo catch and really good throw from Levis. Like, we got really high on those calls, because that's how I am as a broadcaster. I get excited for it. But going into this game, there was certainly in the back of my head, like, I also want to see the Bears do well, because it makes my life a little bit easier. It makes my job more fun, because I do have to, you know, be here to hear and absorb all the kind of feelings of a fan base. And it's just more fun when the team that you cover is winning. It's how I feel about the Bulls, but it's more of an easy thing to do with them because, you know, we are the home broadcast and it's a little bit more, you know, so it's more of an easy thing. But it is something I'm conscious about. Not so much that I'm sitting up the night before worried about it or thinking about it that much during the game, but I do try to do some conscious things to make sure, like, just to help myself stay, you know, make sure I keep my objectivity, just as a little reminder. I don't really think it affects fans that much. I think it's just more so an in-game reminder for myself to, hey, keep kind of looking at both sides objectively as much as you can.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you were prepping for this game, and honestly, all through the preseason, I know this has mostly been debunked, but I still like bringing it up because it's such a wild juxtaposition from what a lot of people thought in college. Dealing with Caleb Williams from a media standpoint, you know, prepping for games, your little production meetings, the things you're able to do. In your interactions with him, how was he with the media? Because, of course, we know everything we heard about how he wouldn't talk to the media, he was difficult, all this stuff in college, versus what seems been since he's entered the combine and the draft and this whole process seems to be a total 180 from what people heard the rumors were in college.
I never covered Caleb in college, so I didn't know what the – I never had a personal experience with him. But the interactions I've had with him since – he got to the Bears have been more than pleasant. They've been very professional. He's pretty polished. You know, he still talks like a 22-year-old. You know, it's not like he's completely smooth. He says and a little bit, and he's kind of thinking through some things like literally every 22-year-old I've ever met in my life has to think through things when they're talking. It is rare to find the person of that age that is so articulate that it just blows you away. Like, he's a kid. You know, he's still a kid. He's figuring this out. But he also understands the level of professionalism that I think is required of you when you're the quarterback of any franchise in this league, because you're going to be under the microscope every day, essentially. And, you know, however many times a week you are assigned to talk to the media, whether it's in a one-on-one sit down or whether it's in a production meeting with a group of us, or if it's in a sideline interview with, you know, a reporter like we had yesterday with Christina Pink. I think there's a lot of spots where he just comes off as a really thoughtful, polished guy, and he still has a long way to go. And they all do. Every single rookie has a long way to go with that. So I've never gotten a sense of real entitlement. Now, if there is some there from people that know him better than I do, sure. I don't think I have the whole picture on the kid. You know, I don't think that's the case, but I feel like I've got a decent amount of interaction with him, and I've always walked away, you know, the three times I think I've had interactions with him for the purpose of getting ready for any broadcast, he's been great, man. So I hope he, you know, he's going to have to get used to it fast. He's going to get the NBC crew. He's going to get two of the better broadcasters in the business in Tirico and Collinsworth, and a veteran reporter in Melissa Stark. And you know, a really good production crew. They're going to be asking them probably some tougher questions or some more in-depth questions because they kind of have the platform to do so. You know, that Sunday night broadcast just gets a lot of leeway to dive into more stories and things like that. So he's going to probably have a tougher time with them than he had with us, and not in a bad way, just that's the nature of the Sunday night game and the big national game. So he'll get used to it fast. He'll adjust. He'll keep getting better and more comfortable. And now he's good. He'll get more comfortable as time goes on.
All right, well, let's get on to the field and get into some of that stuff here before I let you go. And I want to ask you a little bit about kind of some of the stuff you were talking about with your first answer and base that off of the statistic. I don't remember the exact number, the 0-12-1 first overall quarterback.
Yeah,
2003, whatever it is. And the one thing that has been my stance on that the whole time is that these first overall quarterbacks are literally on the worst team in the NFL.
Yes, yes.
Playing their first game in the next season. So, and now they've gone from whatever quarterback they had to a rookie quarterback. So, you know, there's going to be growing pains there. So it almost makes sense that those numbers exist. And that's why I said that's not a comparable situation for the Bears. And we saw it play out exactly like that, that Caleb Williams did debut like a rookie quarterback. But the rest of the team, I mean, Jalen Johnson talked about today, we wanted to pick him up. We knew there were going to be moments like this. So to me, like seeing how the team rallied around him, really, I mean, with all the wild Justin Fields stuff from the offseason and people go, oh, you know, you'll wreck the locker room if you trade him, all these things. Seeing where the team is now with this rookie quarterback and seeing him kind of pick him up in a game performance like this, where this may be his worst performance of the year. Hopefully it is, crossing fingers, that it was a really great, despite what they had out of the quarterback, a really great team win.
I think the quotes like I can't remember who said, it might have been Tyreek Stevenson said, you know, we got him and he's got us. And that's a pretty strong statement. It's a bar, you know, from in a very small, concise statement. That says a lot to me in my estimation. So, I never got a sense of this group of anything other than like confidence in one another. They've talked about Caleb Williams like he was going to be a captain from pretty much the start. And for as many narratives and stories that have been written about Williams' attitude or whatever it may be, or, you know, what he wanted in his contract or, you know, whatever, you know, random stories you're going to pass through when you start prepping for a guy, you know, 6 weeks out. I've never heard anything from a player other than like the good stuff, like the right things, or at least the things that you want to hear from, you know, a teammate. You want to hear that, yeah, he studies, he knows what we know. I think Eberflus has done a nice job of putting expectations on him. I think he called him the apex of our offense. I think he said that to Caleb. He said, you're the apex of our offense. You have to know everything. You have to know more than anybody else. You have to know everybody's position and what they do. Like, yeah, that's the weight of being a starting quarterback in the NFL if you want to be successful. And I think he takes to that. And if he didn't take to that, I don't think these guys would say some of the things that they've said over the course of the last couple of months. So in picking him up, in picking the offense up, and like I said, Kevin Byard kind of said as much, they kind of have the expectation that they're going to have to carry some of the load. And there are going to be games where the defense plays poorly. You know, Caleb got used to that at USC. USC's defense now, you know, through their first couple of games, apparently is out of this world. And he even joked with us, you know, he's like, man, I could have used that defense before. You know, like he made reference to it, which I thought was pretty funny. So I think there was an expectation that that was going to be the case. And to the defense's credit, after a half where, you know, Tennessee ran all over them and, you know, they missed a lot of tackles, which is not something you expect to see from this defense, they played really, really well. Their coverage got better. I thought Eberflus called a good game. I thought he blitzed at good times. The blitzes were impactful and productive. Obviously, the pick six by Stevenson is the headline play of the game, essentially, on defense. But I thought there were a lot of good things from those guys. So the fact that they did carry and help Caleb Williams when he had a not-so-great debut, I think that speaks volumes about him. What was said after, I think, speaks volumes about him. And I think the performance in itself speaks volumes about how good the defense has the potential to be this year.
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying there. So let me ask you about last thing on Caleb, about his performance on the field, because I don't think there's too much we can take away from that performance. But I thought the one thing that was interesting, because the accuracy was terrible. He was certainly struggling. He was pressing. You know, yeah, Keenan Allen had a ball that he should have had in the end zone, and that hurt. Maybe that boosts his confidence a little. But whatever the situation was, it was physically, it wasn't his best performance. But the one thing that I'll take from it is he never seemed rattled. He seemed settled the whole game. And the one thing that Bears quarterbacks who didn't quite make it, big difference, is those crippling mistakes that you know, whether, you know, Trubisky forces a ball and throws an interception, Justin Fields takes a bad sack or fumbles or something like that. We saw when things weren't going quite right, the quarterback make a mistake that just really wrecked the offense. And to Kayla's credit, he took the one horrible sack early in the game where he lost like 20 yards, whatever it was. But other than that, there were no turnovers, a couple errant throws. I get it. You want to say he was lucky or whatever on a couple of them. But overall, I thought he did a really good job despite the struggles of not pressing so much where he made a crippling mistake.
I think there were a couple of good decisions in there. Most of them involving not forcing a ball. I think most importantly, he didn't force too much. If really any, I can't really remember more than one or two throws where it felt like, you know, he's really putting the ball in harm's way. There was a good scramble. I think it might have been the first scramble that he had that went for that first down. And then late in the game, staying in bounds. You know, like, hey, there's some good, just smart. These are basic things that you expect from the quarterback, but not every quarterback gets this stuff out of the gate. So at the very least, some good small signs that he's on a good trajectory. And most importantly, is your point, Bill, don't put the ball in harm's way. You know, and that's the difference. That was the difference in the two quarterbacks who played the game yesterday. Like Will Levis outplayed Caleb in terms of most of his throws, leading the offense on scoring drives in the first half. You know, he definitely outplayed Caleb for the majority of the game, but the mistakes are what killed Tennessee. It was the really bad decision to fling the ball ahead on that pick six play. The kind of leaving the ball up for Daryl Taylor, who I thought actually may have been the defensive MVP outside of Stevenson yesterday. I thought he played as good of a game on defense as any player for the Bears, and that's pretty impressive considering he just showed up, you know, a week and a half ago. I think there's a lot of good stuff in there from just a small decision-making standpoint. And again, that you saw the difference between good decision-making and bad decision-making. So again, I think the thing I've said about Caleb, I think he's a cumulative learner. I think he has more potential for two steps forward, one step back play and learning and trajectory relative to the last maybe three or four quarterbacks that the Bears have had that feel more like one step forward, one step, or two steps back. I think there's a linear projection. I expect the linear projection from Caleb Williams as he moves on in his career. And I'm not making the comparison. It's a good thought to have, though. Like, some of the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history have not played well in their debuts. Peyton Manning sticks out, right? Like, he had a dreadful game. He was one of those losses, I believe, and they were 3-13 his rookie year, and he threw 28 picks. The stat that you mentioned, by the way, was 0-14-1, I think, since 2002, since David Carr won the first ever Houston Texans game. They beat Dallas in their first ever game, but the overall record was 3-14-1. For number one quarterbacks in the Super Bowl era, the common draft era, that were picked number one and played week one. The only four guys now that have won are Jim Plunkett, John Elway, Carr, and now Caleb Williams. So, again, I agree with you, Bill. Those teams are typically the worst in the NFL the year prior. This is a little bit of a different case, but a win's a win, and it's a fun stat to be able to look at.
Yeah, absolutely. Two more quick ones for you. You pretty much answered all my defensive questions just kind of through the body of the interview. So we'll skip the defense, but I do want to ask you about the special teams. Obviously, Velus had the one bad fumble that cost him 3 points. But other than that play, I thought the special teams unit was as good as the defense was. I thought the special teams unit was the unit of the day, not just the block punt, but, you know, a couple of really nice returns from Carter. I thought Travis Homer was a key piece on a lot of key special teams plays. I really think that Richard Hightower deserves a tip of the cap. I thought he had that unit ready to go. And, you know, you always talk about, you know, you got to win in all three phases. They absolutely won on special teams.
I mean, Daniel Hardy, a guy who there was no guarantee he was going to even make the roster, and he was active on opening day and played a huge role, got that block punt. Jonathan Owens, I thought, was a great pickup for this group. You know, a guy who's played a lot of football, a decent amount of football the last 3-4 years, whether it was in Houston or in Green Bay the last couple, and was a great addition to backup safety. And that's why he's on the rosters, for his ability to make at least some impact in special teams, whether it's tackling or in that case, you know, being ready for the ricochet and being able to take it to the house. The returns by Carter were great. They didn't give up too many long returns. I think they contained Tajay Spears and Jaquan Jackson for the most part in the return game for Tennessee. And Torrey Taylor, man, first off, Scott Daly stepping in. We didn't have a snappish. I know he had a penalty on a punt, but like no real issues on snaps. The operation on kicking with Taylor being a first time, I think he's a first time holder in the NFL. Obviously, got all the reps in the preseason, but that operation was great. Santos continues to be one of the best kickers in the NFL, and Taylor with a 60-yarder did a really good job, I think, flipping the field. Not a lot of long punt returns for Tennessee. So I'm with you, man. Richard Hightower's done a great job. We talked with him in the preseason because I know it's going to get a little bit more interesting as maybe we get into the second month of the year with what we might see on these dynamic kickoffs. But well-prepared, outplayed the Tennessee special teams in a big way. And I do think that that's going to have to be the case, right? There's going to have to be, you know, a good special teams effort or one splash play in a game for the Bears to stem the tide and kind of give a little bit of a breather to their offense, take a little bit of pressure off the offense.
All right, so last thing for you, and Adam Amin's done a great job here. You know, we watched this team through the preseason, and obviously week one. Is there a part of this team right now that you kind of circle and have the most concern about? Maybe not that it's necessarily doomed, but, you know, I know Coleman Shelton struggled. You know, Nate Davis, you know, came in and out. They said the rotation was expected. Tevin Jenkins had a poor game. You know, I had concerns about the defensive line, but overall I thought the defensive line played pretty well. Obviously Pollard, you know, probably a little too much yardage to Pollard early on in that game. But, you know, overall I thought the linebackers played great. The secondary was great. You know, wide receivers, you know, there's a lot to be positive of. But is there an area of the team where you sit there and say, this is an area they need to work on a little bit?
I think the communication on some of the blitz pickup or the stunts that, you know, Tennessee was able to put together. Shelton did not have a great game. Obviously we saw that, or at the very least had enough rough moments to justify calling it a not great game, because I'm sure he did a lot of other little things really, really well with a rookie quarterback. Again, I think, you know, Caleb wasn't under a ton of duress as the game went on. I think it got a little bit better as the game went on. So you credit Shelton and Caleb at the line. And I thought they did a decent job of making sure they were communicating and being on the right page to prevent some major, major defensive plays from Tennessee. But overall, I don't think it was the best effort there. And then, a lot of little stuff to clean up. Some missed tackles got cleaned up, I thought, in the second half. The defense obviously played much, much better. I was surprised to see the Keenan Allen drops. I mean, he had 5 drops, I think, last year. And it depends on which statistical website you look at. Some sites consider something a drop that others don't. But, you know, there are a handful of plays last year that Allen could have made that he didn't. But over the course of a long career, I mean, he is one of the best receivers in the game. Very, very sure-handed. So it was a shock, especially at the pylon, you know, when there's a touchdown on both ends of that play for, a rookie and a vet. I was surprised to see that misfire. But I think a lot of that stuff gets cleaned up on an individual basis. I think the offensive line play in general needs to be a little bit better, and I do think they'll improve as they get a little bit more time and a few more reps.
All right, well, there he is, Adam Amin. He was on the call for Bears, Titans, and, of course, all through the preseason. And you'll hear him, I'm sure, on NFL on Fox for another Bears game in the near future. And, of course, all the Bulls and everything else he does. Adam, thanks for so much time. Great interview, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Billy. I appreciate it, bud.
All right, there he is, Adam Amin. That was a good spot. First time on the podcast, he brought it. A lot of good information, you know, good conversation there with Adam. And, you know, a little bit about his Chicago background and being a Bears fan and everything. I thought that was really good. I hope you enjoyed it as well. As we do, let's get to the mailbag, and let's start with Ed Helinski at Mr. Ed 315. Who's going to be the first Bear to score an offensive touchdown? Who are you liking for this? All right. I do think the Bears, I'll go out on a limb here. The Bears will score an offensive touchdown against the Houston Texans. It is pretty remarkable. Kind of have that Arizona Cardinals vibe with this Titans win, right? With the defensive touchdown and the special teams touchdown and a bunch of field goals. Not quite as extreme as Devin Hester and Brian Urlacher doing everything in their power to win a football game while Rex Grossman does everything in his power to lose a game. It wasn't that bad, but it did kind of have that vibe to it. So look, if I got the Roma Dunze angle was a good angle if you were looking to bet this in terms of not having a high priority guy. I think, you know, Keenan Allen doesn't score a lot of touchdowns. I think DJ Moore is obviously a safe guy. I think Cole Kmet would have been a safe guy, but Cole Kmet, not as many snaps, I think, as a lot of people expected. So this is kind of a boring answer, if I'm being honest here with you, Ed. But I'm going to say DeAndre Swift. I think Swift, I think Shane Waldron showed that he wants to use Swift. He wants to use him frequently in the offense. He's going to get a lot of touches. I think it's just going to kind of come down to the fact that they're going to get in the red zone, and DeAndre Swift, whether it's running the football, whether it's, you know, a little swing pass, a little dump off, screen, whatever it might be, I think DeAndre Swift just makes too much sense to be the Bears' first offensive touchdown scorer. Stephen Clapp at Stephen Clapp. Pretty easy to get him. Why haven't Poles Cunningham had a solid center on the roster in 3 years? Mustafer, Patrick, now Shelton. This is two former linemen who had Humphrey and Kelsey. All right, Stephen. So, that Ryan Poles at some point in the future is going to have to talk about what his process was on the offensive line, because it is weird, right? Now, if you kind of look at things, the Braxton Jones thing kind of fell in his lap. Maybe things would have changed a little bit had Jones not performed as well as he did as a rookie. But, you know, he drafted all those offensive linemen in the fifth and sixth round, you know, Kramer, the guy that went to the Rams, Zach Thomas, you know, all those guys. And of course, Braxton Jones, he put 3-4 offensive linemen, you know, Tyree Carter, and who's going to stick. He got a starter, one starter out of that. That's all you needed. Braxton Jones. Well done. Then he adds Darnell Wright. You're like, okay, so you're going to keep adding a piece every year. Then he doesn't touch offensive line in this draft, you know, in terms of production right away. He drafts a project in Karan Amagaji, also a left tackle, projects at Braxton Jones' position specifically. So you've kind of double drafted at left tackle, you've drafted at right tackle, and then along the interior, he's done very little. Now, Tevin Jenkins was already here. Tevin Jenkins reluctantly agreed to move to guard, and Tevin Jenkins has found a role there. So that's not a place where he's needed to find anyone. He did bring in Nate Davis. We know that hasn't worked, but still, he committed money to Nate Davis. So this gets you back to, Stephen, where you are at center. So when you're going back to 2022, the Sam Mustipher, Lucas Patrick situation, you can't complain about, because he was saddled with so many mediocre football players from Ryan Pace, as Pace desperately tried to cling to his job at the end of that regime, that Sam Mustipher was just a leftover piece. That's all it was. He wasn't planning on having Sam Mustipher probably play. Maybe he wasn't even planning on having Sam Mustipher make the team. Lucas Patrick gets banged up, has some injury issues. And now we know how bad Lucas Patrick was. But Lucas Patrick was a 2-year, $8 million contract. It was a bargain basement signing. Lucas Patrick was basically signed to be a cheap center. He was the Coleman Shelton signing of 2 years ago. So when you look at what Ryan Poles was doing, you can't fault him for the Mustipher and the Patrick signing. You can fault him for not addressing center in 2022. And you can fault him for how he, I'm sorry, in 2023. I screwed up there. So the Lucas Patrick in 2022, but you can't fault him for 2020. You can fault him for, geez. This is where you wish you could hit delete on a podcast. You can fault him for 2023, and you can fault him for 2024. Now, 2023, he had gone out and gotten Darnell Wright and Nate Davis. So you sit there and go, all right, he's gotten Darnell Wright. He's getting Nate Davis. He's got Tevin Jenkins. He's got Braxton Jones. They're going to ride it out with Lucas Patrick. I didn't hate the plan last year when that's how it went, because they did try and improve. They got two new starters along the offensive line. You can't replace everybody. So I was okay with that. How he addressed it this year, he's got a crush on Ryan Bates. I don't know why he has such a crush on Ryan Bates. Ryan Bates is a nice football player. Ryan Bates is not some secretive stud, but he is a nice football player, and he can play center. Coleman Shelton, again, I think Coleman Shelton is better than what he looked in week one, but your point is fair. Why didn't he go after a better center? Now, you can take this for what it's worth. You don't have to believe me, but I feel I have it on a pretty good source that Connor Williams was the plan at center for Ryan Poles this year. Like November, early December, he was planning on going out and getting Williams. And after the ACL, knowing that he was going to have a rookie quarterback, that whole plan blew up. Plan B becomes the Ryan Bates trade and Coleman Shelton. Now, some of you might have said Lloyd Cushenberry. There were other centers out there. I think he saw Connor Williams as a difference maker and saw Cushenberry as a good center that was going to be overpaid. Again, we see this constantly with Ryan Poles. He has a ceiling on what he will pay guys, and he will not pay over that. Sometimes it hurts him. We're like, ah, you could have gotten a little bit more. You would have had this guy. But I think a lot of times it helps him in terms of not overpaying. So I think all my babbling there, Steven, gets to the point of I'll give him a pass on all this if he addresses center legitimately in 2025. And that either means signing a free agent that is a much more significant free agent than anything he's tried, or, and I don't know who this player would be. We need some more college football and we need some time for players to emerge. But usually that second round pick they have from Carolina, that looks like it's going to be 33, 34, 35. Carolina looks dreadful. That's a great spot to pick a center and like the best center in the draft. That is a really good spot for the Chicago Bears. If there is a center that Ryan Poles likes, he should be able to target him and grab him with the Carolina Panthers pick. And that I would be fine with going out and getting a center that you have, you know, 4 to 5 years of control and move forward with him. That is a good plan for Ryan Poles. I hope that is his plan, but he cannot go into another year addressing center with guys making $3 or $4 million a year and think that is going to be okay. So, JT Barzak, after game one, following the article on the offensive line, I wrote an article saying the Bears' depth at offensive line should make you feel better about the lack of power up front with the starters. What's the concern level there? It was a collective effort to put up only 149 yards and no touchdowns, but how much was it the OL versus Caleb being inaccurate versus receivers not getting open or dropping TD passes? JT, all of it. The offense just didn't click for a variety of reasons. The interior offensive line got pushed around. Caleb Williams was inaccurate. There were drop passes. The unit overall, again, I am not overly concerned about the offensive line because, again, I thought both tackles played well. I think Ryan Bates was all right. I actually think Nate Davis was all right. I think Shelton and Jenkins were dreadful. And all the offensive line problems you saw, 95% of them came from Coleman, from Jenkins and Shelton. So when that's the case, the whole offensive line looks bad. So again, could you go, obviously Tevin Jenkins is going to stay out there. Could you potentially, if Shelton still struggles for a couple more weeks, could you move Ryan Bates to center and have Nate Davis play right guard or even Matt Pryor play right guard? You've got options there. So there are things they can do because of the depth. So not a high level of concern overall. I just think we need to see this offense click a little bit more. And that was a theme across the NFL. A lot of bad quarterback play, a lot of bad offenses. So it's only week one. there is no reason to panic. And our last question, Chris Armstrong. A number of folks have noted the weird personnel usage in week one. Is Waldron known for that sort of nonsense? All right, Chris. Well, I'm not sure about the weird personnel usage you're talking about because, all right, I'm going to babble here. I should have had this prepared, but, you know, I don't prepare anything. So I am going to just babble here as I Google on my phone because that's what makes a good podcast is Googling live on the air. But let's look at the Chicago Bears and their snap counts. And of course, the first article I bring up does not have the Chicago Bears snap counts, only the Titans snap counts. What are you doing to me, Yahoo? You're really not here. They're not here anywhere. I can't believe that. All right. Yahoo Sports is now dead to me. All right. Lester, why don't you have better SEO? Why aren't you popping up? Why aren't you popping up with your snap counts, Lester Wildfong? I blame your poor SEO for this. Not that anyone knows what I'm talking about with SEO, but that's, here we go. See, now I've got Lester's snap counts. Here we go. Lester Wildfong coming to the rescue. All right, Chris, you say there's weird usage. Let's look for some weird usage on the offensive front. All right, let's start at running back here because DeAndre Swift got 70% of the snaps. That's what we talked about going in here. This was DeAndre Swift's backfield. This was not a backfield by committee. Travis Homer, I believe I told you before that Shane Waldron used Travis Homer in Seattle, and I would not be surprised if he uses Travis Homer here. Travis Homer, 20% of the snaps as basically RB2. Little surprising, Khalil Herbert, 11% of the snaps, and Valus Jones, 7% of the snaps. So that's basically your running back usage. I don't think that's weird at all. So, all right. You're coming to receivers, DJ Moore, Rome Odunze, 89%, 77%, Keenan Allen, 68%. Not having a problem with any of that there. DeAndre Carter, 23%, probably a little higher than I would have expected, 13 snaps. I probably would have expected him around 5 or 6, but am I going to freak out that DeAndre Carter had 5 or 6 more snaps than I expected him to? No, I am not. So then we're going to get to tight end, and I'm going to assume, Chris, that tight end is where you've got an issue and people have an issue because Gerald Everett played 61% of the snaps and Cole Kmet played 48% of the snaps. Mercedes Lewis, 16% of the snaps. Now, Mercedes Lewis, that's probably about where he is. I would have thought he was going to be up at 20, 25%, but Mercedes Lewis isn't going to play that much. And you almost wonder if Mercedes Lewis, I'd have to look at the specifics of when Lewis and Herbert were in the game. But Khalil Herbert, again, you say Shane Waldron, this type of nonsense. To me, this isn't nonsense. This is Shane Waldron does not like to make his personnel usage predictive as to what type of play it is. So when Khalil Herbert's in there, it's going to be a run because Khalil Herbert can't do anything in the passing game. When Mercedes Lewis is in there, it's going to be a run. So I don't know. Did he play blazing game? Herbert and Lewis all at the same time and just said, screw it. They're going to know we're running the football. We're going to have our best personnel out there. Maybe he did. I'd have to go back and look specifically at the plays and the personnel usage. I didn't do that when I rewatched the game, but yes, the biggest surprise there is that Gerald Everett played more than Cole Kmet. I think that's surprising, but I will say this. Shane Waldron likes explosive players. We can see it. DeAndre Carter's an explosive player. He gets out there. Swift, Herbert, Odunze, they like explosive players. Cole Kmet's not explosive. Cole Kmet's reliable. Cole Kmet's useful. Cole Kmet is not explosive. Gerald Everett is a more explosive player. So if they're trying to get explosive plays on offense, that may be something we see moving forward. We know he likes using two tight ends. From day one, since Shane Waldron was hired, look out for two tight ends. He likes using multiple tight ends, two tight end sets. He won't just be Kmet. He'll use Everett, all this stuff. So to me, I look at this and go, it was a little weird that Cole Kmet didn't play more. Probably expect Cole Kmet to play more moving forward. But I really didn't think this was a weird usage at all. I think Shane Waldron thought he had some depth at his weapons and tried to utilize as many different packages as he could. I didn't find the usage weird. I didn't find the usage pissifying. I'm fine with Gerald Everett being out there more because I think Gerald Everett is a better pass catching weapon than Cole Kmet. He's better at it. Cole Kmet's a better overall tight end, but and again, they're slightly different tight ends. You've got an inline versus a U, but I'm fine with Gerald Everett playing. I think Cole Kmet, as a local kid that Bears fans have really grown to love over the last 4 years, I think maybe you got some people pissed that Cole Kmet didn't play more. But it's 1 week. Settle down, everybody. We'll see how things go moving forward. All right. So as we wrap up the podcast, let's get to the prediction. Houston Texans on the road. Sunday night football. A lot of reasons to not like the Chicago Bears in this one. And I can't sit here after the offensive performance in week one and pick the Chicago Bears to win this football game. I just can't. And I don't think many people are going to, and that's okay. The Chicago Bears, the 2024 Chicago Bears are not ready, especially in week two, to go on the road and beat the Houston Texans. Now, if they do, look out. The Bears are going to be the talk of the NFL. I do expect Caleb Williams to play better. I don't think Caleb Williams is going to play great. I think Caleb Williams can throw for 170 to 200 yards, perhaps a touchdown, maybe, you know, stretching it a little more. Maybe he throws his first career interception. But I think the Bears offense looks better, doesn't look good enough. The Bears defense continues to look good, but doesn't look as good as they did in week one. I think the Houston Texans do manage to score some points, and I think they win this one pretty comfortably. I don't think it's going to be a blowout, but I do think the Chicago Bears lose this one by two scores. So let's say it's going to be 27-17 Houston Texans with the victory, and that's okay. The Chicago Bears can get ready for week three at 1-1, which is all they needed to be. All right, that's going to do it for Bears Banter. We will talk to you next week. Bear down, everybody. Adios.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.